Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You are now tuned in to The Pastor Spot, a weekly radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship. My name is Terry Tackett, and I will now turn it over to the host of the show, Pastor Steve Whitaker. Hello, Pastor.
Hey, Terry. It's good to be here. I have been really not plugged in too much lately. I know last week with Nate, I wasn't even here, and I tried to do the show remotely, and we did for a few minutes, for about a half hour or so, and I had to cut it short. But it's just been such a busy, busy time. What is with this beautiful weather? Man. I know some people say it's too hot, but hey, yeah. I'll soak in the rays while I can, right?
That's what I love. The first part of October, it's still 90, man. I mean,
that's great. Yeah, it really is. But it was a scorcher today, and I'm ready for it. I don't know. Everyone's going to be talking about Florida within a month, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to go down actually the last of the month, and my sister is moving to North Carolina, and I'm going to drive the U-Haul truck from their place in. They're down between Clearwater and Tampa. Mm. I'm going to drive it from there over to North Carolina, but. We probably won't be that cold yet, I don't think.
No.
It's hard to tell. So how you been, buddy?
Been pretty good.
Yeah. Good deal. Yeah. Hey, everybody, I'm the pastor at Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. We are a Bible-teaching, Bible-believing, and a Bible-obedient church. We have a lot of things coming up in this next month. Actually, this coming Sunday at 3 o'clock, put this on your calendar, this Sunday at 3 o'clock is our annual Fall Festival in the Park. And it'll be right there at Prospect Park at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We will have, we're going to have some great food this year. Just really good stuff. I'll surprise you. Just come. And, of course, we'll have hay rides and bounce houses and games. And we usually have face painting and Bible stories for kids. And just a real lot of music, a lot of neat stuff going on. And it doesn't cost you a dime. Just get there and have a good time. So that's something we can look forward to. Also, for any men in the area, we do have men's breakfast coming up this Saturday at 8 o'clock in the morning at the church. We are at 209 East Water Street in Prospect, Ohio. You're welcome to come to that. Our services are Sunday morning. We have a Bible study hour at 9:30, and we have a regular service at 10:30. In the evening time, we have an evening roundtable service, and that's usually at about 6:30, and then we also have youth group, which our youth group's been running every other week, but they've been going on an activity. And this last weekend, they actually went to the skating rink in Marion, and Stephen Poe, who took them this week, used to have a skating ministry, and he is an unbelievable skater. Just had a blast with the kids. They got to eat, and this stuff doesn't cost them anything, so they go and they have a great time. But they have done so much this year between going to a pond swimming and building boats and making floatable races with cardboard boats, and they've just done all kinds of stuff this year. So it won't be this Sunday, but again, we'll have it the following Sunday, I believe. But call the church and find out those schedules. We are at 740-494-2222. And also you can reach us at prospectccf.com. So find out all the information you want. We do have Team Kid getting ready to kick off too, which is from 6 o'clock. No, 6:30 to 8 o'clock. I apologize. I always get that wrong. 6:30 to 8 o'clock every other Tuesday. And that's for the wee ones all the way up to 6th grade. And they just have a blast. So anyway, you want to come to that, we'd love to have you. Very, very welcoming bunch of people. What are we going to talk about tonight, Jerry?
I was just getting ready to ask you, what's on your mind tonight? I mean,
I have a lot on my mind as usual. I wish sometimes I could slow it down, but it seems to bounce around a lot at times. But what I want to talk about tonight is when surprises hit and when tragedy comes upon us. People, wouldn't you say that most of the time when something tragic happens, it's unexpected?
Yeah,
most of the time.
Sure.
Really unexpected. I have some dear friends whose family was in a very serious car wreck or motorcycle wreck yesterday. Totally unexpected. Completely unexpected. And those are tough times to go through. And a lot of times people don't know who to turn to. It's really wonderful that God can be there for us. You know, God doesn't cause these things, but he's certainly there for us to help us through them. We live in a broken world, and a lot of different things happen. But, you know, we focus so much on the negative all the time. Think about this a minute. What's a tragedy in some people's life? Some people, it would be losing a job, drop in income for some reason, an illness, losing a family member, divorce, that's always a big one. What else might be one? I'll be honest with you, some people can't get over a political race when it's over. And, you know, they have a perceived tragedy there. But, you know, the thing that keeps me comforted each and every day is to know that God is there through all of this. You know, God, he says he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. So God doesn't change. We change. We change the way we see things, the way we view things, the way we handle things, the way we process things. But God doesn't change. So if there's any solid thing that we can hold on to at the time of a tragedy, it's God. Because in a tragedy, you don't know what to do because something blindsided you that you weren't ready for. But what's really cool is you can turn to a God that is never blindsided by anything, and he's not going to change. I mean, sometimes we grasp and we don't know what to hold on to when the storm's life hit. And, you know, it's just, you know how it is when something really tragic happens or something like that, and all of a sudden your head's just spinning. You don't know what to do. It's even funny, and it depends on the time in life, but I can remember as a young teenager, you know, when a girlfriend did that to me. You know, all of a sudden a girlfriend, you know, doesn't want to see you anymore, drops out of the picture, and you're just, you know, you're devastated. You see kids do this stuff. I can remember being just my head spinning, you know. Same thing, of course, you know, when I was a young teenager, lost my father. I mean, how do you process that? What do you do? And many times I have friends that have had a spouse just completely blindside them with a divorce that they never, ever saw coming. There's a lot of those kind of things that happen. A job where you walk in one day and you don't have a job anymore. And you thought everything was fine. And, you know, I know a family member one time that had just gotten a raise and an excellent review. And a couple days later, they fired him. It was over a whim, just something that they wanted something else. And someone popped in that wanted that job that was a friend of theirs, and they fired him. So these things are they happen. You're going along okay, and maybe you have a child that is you think is doing great, and you find out they did some horrible thing, or they fall into drugs, or they fall, you know, whatever these things may be. But how do we handle them? Well, I want to give you a couple examples tonight, if I could. I've got and I'm sure he won't mind me saying this, Bob Dowds is a teacher and a girls basketball coach at Elgin. And Bob, a year ago, found out he had cancer. Though that blindsides you. You know, he's got a little girl. He's got a couple kids, but he's got a little girl still at home. He's got a wife. And he was in for a lot of treatment, and he still is. He just started, I believe, another round of radiation, several rounds of radiation. But I look at Bob and how he's handled it, and he has given it to God. He spends time with his family in prayer. And as difficult as it is, and as much as I know there's sickness and I know there's pain, the strength that he has showed through saying, I'm giving this to God, and I know he's got it because I don't. You know what I mean? It to me shows a great deal of strength, and there's hope in that. You know, when you can give things to God and you trust God, there's hope in that. And, you know, some people say, well, you know, we had hope when this happened in my family or that happened, and we prayed and it never happened. One thing that's very hard for us to accept as people, because we want to control everything, is the fact that God knows what's best. When I was a young man and in my teens, early teen. Well, I was 13. That's about as early a teen as you get, isn't it, Terry? Anyway, tragically lost my father in a car accident. That was tough. That was real tough. I didn't realize at the time how tough it was on me until years later looked back. and saw my behavior and how much it affected me more than I was realizing it did, I think. Just in my behavior alone, my thought patterns, what I did. But anyway, I moved forward, I moved on, and I trusted God, and God's done miraculous things. But at the time, everyone said, you know, wow, what a tragic thing. He's only 40 years old. He's got a kid still at home. He's got, you know, a wife that's only 39, and all these things that went with it. Why would God do this? Well, speaking from someone who it's been, oh my, it's been 40 years since that happened, 40 years plus, looking back, and I see the things that God, in, the instrumental things God did in everyone's life involved from that point on. It's amazing to me how much God knew what he was doing, was in control. It shouldn't amaze me, but I say it's an amazing thing to look at and to see. The things that came out of that, positive things that came out of that. Now, was it horrible growing up without a dad? You better believe it. There's not much worse for a teenage boy than having all their friends have dads that they go hunting with and going to over to people's house, and they got a mom and dad, and you've got a mom at home that's struggling with two, actually three jobs at one point just to keep everybody fed, and you don't have that dad. You know, that's hard. It was very hard to go through. It's hard when we had our first child, when I got married. All those things that you can't celebrate with your dad. That's hard. But with that being said, I know I'll see him one day, and I'll see him in heaven, and what a glorious reunion that'll be. But in the meantime, God needed to have that situation happen so some other things would fall into place that he had total control of. And I think as people, we have trouble relinquishing control of our lives to God and accepting that. And if we can just accept that God understands and God knows, and we can trust God, it allows us to get through these times so, so much easier. And I don't know, I don't understand, you know, some of the things that people go through. And I'm not going to pretend I do. You know, one of the worst things I think you can tell people sometimes is, I know how you're feeling. Because you don't. You know, even if two people go through the same thing, you know, it doesn't mean that they're feeling the same way about it. And I had a friend, he was actually a seminary teacher one time, that was suddenly found out overnight that his wife had this devastating disease. And they had she was pregnant at the time. I think she was barely 6 months, maybe 5.5 months. And she's in the hospital, and they say, you know, she's got to deliver this baby or she's going to die. And she, you know, on and on. Anyway. So long story short, with all this stuff just blindsiding him that was going on, he said the greatest comfort that he had were a friend or two that would just come in and they would sit there and just want to let you know, buddy, I'm here for you. I'm beside you. Never even talked to him. If he wanted to talk to them, they'd talk, but they were there. And sometimes that's so much better than the person that jumps in and wants to force the conversation. Or many times, you know, one of the struggles I have as a pastor many times is when there's a tragedy, like this accident yesterday and those type of things, how much do I contact them and how much do I stay back? You know, I don't want to impose, but at the same time, I don't want to seem like I don't care, because I really care, but I don't want to go over my boundary in imposing on a family in a family's time. So that's something that, in my case, I have to give to God and say, God, you know, give me the judgment I need at this time for this particular family, because they're all different. You may have one family that wants the pastor, and they want them there now. And they need that to lean on them. And you may have another family that thinks, you know, this is a private time for our family. And we welcome the pastor's prayer and the church's prayer. So, yeah, that can be a very difficult time, too.
Yeah, everything you just talked about there. I mean, the same thing. I mean, I had, when I had my tragedies, I had people, you know, that was the first thing they want to say is, oh, I know how you feel. I know how you feel, you know, and. I mean, do you really, or, you know, or?
No. You might be able to guess.
Yeah. And that's the thing that I've been trying to tell people, is that everybody grieves differently.
Ah, yes. You've heard that from me before.
Yeah,
haven't you?
I mean, you know, it's not something that maybe some people in 6 months they're you know, I don't want to say they're okay, but I mean they've dealt with it, let's say, or whatever, you know. But some people it just takes a little, you know. And that's the other thing I hate too, is that, you know, I mean, because I had people, you know, well, just get over it, you know. Do you ever get over it? You never get over it.
You know, Terry, one of the things that I never miss the opportunity to do when I'm doing a funeral, mm-hmm. Whether it is in the actual service or whether it's at the graveside, mm-hmm. I always remind everyone in the room that everyone grieves differently.
Yeah.
In different ways and in different time frames.
Sure.
And don't ever think that a family member doesn't care because they don't seem to be falling apart, because they are. Yeah. And they may not fall apart today, but they may fall apart 2 months from now when you're getting better. And you can't judge things that way. You just have to be there and be supportive for everyone in the family, regardless of what they seem like they're going through or not. I remember when my father died, my little sister Laura was, I think she was 7 or 8. Anyway, they had given her some medicine to calm her down because she just didn't understand. She was a mess. Yeah. Well, this medicine made her giggle and flitter and run all over the place. And I can remember people thinking, wow, you think she'd be more upset about her dad. Well, she was, but she was also medicated. Uh-huh. And so you just really have to understand that, like you said, everyone's different. Every situation's different. I talk to people that, unfortunately, I talk to people that have lost a spouse or a family member 2 and 3 years down the road, and they'll say, I'm just not getting any better. And it's at that point when I really feel my need, and usually long before that, as a pastor to intervene and help them along in a direction they need to be, whether that's it's always trusting God and moving forward that way, but beginning to be able to categorize some things where they need to be and put them where they're supposed to be so those emotions aren't so raw all the time. Mm-hmm. And even finding things to do many times. You know, nothing helps grief like busyness.
Yeah,
you know, it really.
That's what I've learned. That's what I learned, is that, you know, you definitely have to stay busy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because what the trap I found myself falling in was, you go home and your mind just you tend to, you know, you're
alone.
Yeah,
and that's when you think of that situation or those people or whatever it may be, and it's very, very difficult. But you know, tragedy can come in so many ways. First thing, I think one of the things we need to do, if we're going to trust God, we have to remember that. He is there for us as we go through these things. He wants us to give him these things. And we need to realize that most tragedies are not the end of the road. 99% of the tragedies down the road you can look back on and you've gotten through them. So even though everything seems so devastating right in the beginning, many times, you know, most of the time you're going to get through it. And you're going to get past it, and you have to first accept that and realize it. The way I feel right now is not the way I'm going to feel 5 years from now. This is why so many people even take their life, because they just can't imagine how bad things are at that moment. They have to realize that down the road it will be different, it'll be better, it'll be changed, but it'll be okay. And you'll be glad that you got through whatever that is, especially in a job loss. Job losses can be devastating, because what if you got your budget set up on a certain thing and you know, you're going to lose everything? You know, someone told me years ago when I had a company and had a lot of employees, and we went through some really hard times with the actually it was weather related, a bad year that just killed us. And someone told me one time, they said, you know, Steve, they can't eat you. And they had a point to that, and the point being that, look, even if you have to start over at rock bottom, you can start over. Mm-hmm. You're not 90 years old. You know, at the time, I was a young man. Mm-hmm. And I realized, you know what, I guess they're right. Sometimes a tragedy is embarrassing. People can't handle the embarrassment of it. And I think that sometimes what we don't understand, too, whether it's job loss or whatever it is, people have so many things they've gone through. More people could probably relate to your situation more than they could judge your situation. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
don't worry about people pointing fingers at you. The other thing is that, you know, you think, because you're thinking of something all the time, that other people are thinking of you in that situation all the time. But the truth is, that's not what's on their mind. You're not that important to them most of the time. Like, you know, say that you got just, say you got fired from this station. Mm-hmm. You know, one day everything blew up and all the rumors start, and you're thinking, man, people are thinking this of me and that of me. The truth is, most of the time, those people probably aren't thinking of you at all. You know, once in a great while, they may. So don't take those things to heart. Another thing I like to tell people, in a tragedy situation where there's a job firing or even a divorce or whatever it is, the truth has an amazing way of coming to the surface. It really does. And if you're standing in the truth, know that one day people may come to you and say, I'm sorry, I thought wrong when I shouldn't have, or they may never. But the truth is, when you give things to God, He takes care of them, and the truth comes to the surface. One thing I've learned over the years, that when I'm in a situation that I can do nothing about, and sometimes I shouldn't do anything about, I give it to God. Especially in a time when maybe if you're falsely accused of something, you're better off just not saying a word. Just say, Lord, you know the deal. I'm handing you off this one. You know, I got three big linemen in front of me, and they're about to pulverize me. I'm handing you the ball to do an end around, because you know the truth and what's going to get us to the goal. And you hand, because the bottom line is, He handled it much better than I ever could. And a lot of times, many times, when you spend time trying to defend yourself, it just makes you look more guilty. So you're better off just. And people do find out the truth. It may be a week. It may be 5 years. But, you know, they do. I have actually had people come to me years down the road over a situation in a church or something and say, you know, Pastor, I'm sorry. I was wrong. I learned the truth, and I should have never. And that's fine. I don't go, oh, goody, it's about time. Yeah. I just say, well, that's great, because I don't like hard feelings anywhere with anyone. But illness is a very hard one to take, Terry. Illness is something that they call Him the great physician for a reason, because He doesn't just heal the body, He heals the soul. And you know, if the soul is healed, you can get through what's in the body so much easier, and you can move on through what's in the body. You know, the most tragic thing is when somebody is ill physically and they have no hope spiritually, because they're truly sick. And you know what I mean? Without a real hope. And if you have had hope, if you know that regardless of what happens here, regardless of whether I get better, get worse, whether I live, whether I die, God's got me, and I'm His, and I don't have to worry about it. You know, what a way to help heal. They say that in many situations of chronic illnesses or things that even normally be a fatality, cancers and whatnot, that a positive attitude, people heal much quicker. They've done studies on that. If they're positive and if they have hope, than if they just give up mentally. Well, what a better way to be positive and have hope than to know no matter what happens, God wins. And I'm one of His children, and I'm winning right with Him. I've given my life to Him. I've accepted Him as my Lord and Savior. And He tells me that if I do that, that no one can pluck me out of His hand. That gives me every reason in the world for hope. And then I can know that, you know, no matter what I go through, that the ultimate outcome is good. Even if I don't live, the ultimate outcome is good. And many times I think with family members, when I've known people that have gone through terminal situations, and they'll tell their children or their grandchildren or whoever it is, look, I'm going to be okay. Don't worry about me. I'm going to be fine. Let me tell you why. And it's because I've got Jesus Christ in my life. And because I trust God, I'm going to be fine. You're going to miss me. I'm going to miss you, but I'm going to be fine. I'll see you again someday. And that really helps people get through those tragic times. Other than, you know, families come in and they have no hope. You know, they don't know what the next day is going to bring. They don't know what eternity is, where it's going to be. What a sad state of affairs that is to me. And I've seen that too. And I've been, you know, unfortunately, I've had to do some of those funerals too. And it's very hard. It's very difficult to comfort and be honest and do the right thing. Because ultimately, I don't want anyone to ever leave this earth not knowing the Lord. I know that's going to happen. But as long as I have a breathing breath here, you know, that's what my job is. Nothing drives me crazier. Well, a lot of things drive me crazier. Just ask. But anyway, what do they say? You can't drive the driven.
That's huh? right.
Yeah. Anyway, when people say, you know, oh, I'm just sitting back waiting on the Lord to return because this world has gotten so bad. I think, really? So what were you supposed to do while you were here to begin with? Huh? Love your neighbor? Huh? Share the gospel of Jesus Christ? Love people? Care for people? Take care of the sick? Take care of the wounded? The brokenhearted? So you're telling me they're not around anymore? So your job's done? It's time to go? Uh-uh. You're not getting off that easy. You know, if you truly believe God, and if you truly want to... if you truly want to do what he says, and if you truly believe in him and his message of the cross, then you don't want to go anywhere. You want to stay here until your job on earth is done. And believe me, when it's done, he'll let you know, because you're not going to be here. And so, you know, those are just some simple things of going through tragedies that we can do. We need to be able to find the strength to turn to the Lord. And there's another thing that I think is so important, is that when you're going through a tragedy, talk to someone that is going to encourage you, not somebody that is going to depress you. Today, I just got fired at Bob's whatever, plumbing. Lock and key shop, plumbing, whatever it is. And I got 5 or 6 employees there that I know are my friends, and they know I got fired. And I'm just angry as can be. If I spend the next 3 or 4 months constantly talking to those people and stirring up everything going on, I'm not doing anything to move ahead. You know, I always have believed when you're a Christian, you're walking with the Lord, when a door closes, he's getting ready to open another one, or he's already opened it and you just don't know it yet. And that's why I've always looked at losing a position somewhere, losing at something, I've always looked at as a door opening and an opportunity. Because when you're somewhere, obviously, if you got fired, one of two things or both are going on. Either you're not doing your job well, or you're not a fit to the company, or both, right?
Right.
So if that's the case, why would you want to continue being there? Wouldn't you want something where you were a fit and something you felt challenged to keep doing? So the thing is, you know, when you do get fired, you know, maybe you want to step back, have a family meeting, say, you know, we're going to have to tighten our belts for a month or so because I got to get on my feet again. And, you know, we might have to sell the house. Or, like I said earlier, you know, they can't eat you. You know, that's a real true statement. Most people live probably about 30 to 40% above their means. Now, that sounds crazy, but in America, that's true. So if you just back off the 30 or 40%, probably the money that you have coming in during that period is probably enough to sustain you anyway. You know what I mean? Whether you have to draw unemployment or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe you have to say, hey, guess what, folks? We're going to hate to say this, but we got to get rid of the cable bill. You know, there's your $200 a month gone. You know, well, these iPhones, I don't know about them. You know, maybe we just have to do something cheaper as a family right now and get it on a budget deal. On and on it goes. You know, maybe not so many trips in the car. Maybe not so many trips to – we can't go out to eat for a while. We're going to have to – you know, all those things are normal things.
Yeah.
But we think that we have to have more. I love my grandson, Jonah. He gets it from his friends that he doesn't have a cell phone. Jonah's 15 and plays football. He's a great kid. Everyone likes him in school. He's a good kid. But his friends get on him, you know, and girls never want to date a kid that doesn't have a cell phone. You know, you can't even talk to him, you know. And Jonah's just fine with it. He says, you know what? I don't need to be strapped to that stupid phone like all my friends are. I can do what I want to do, and it's not beeping me every 2 seconds that I got to answer somebody. So there's a lot of things that we can do, you know, in those situations. But come together as a family. Pray continually. I haven't brought up praying yet. Praying is so important, whether we're not only in time of tragedy, but in time of great joy and success. You know, we were created by God to have a communication with Him, and He wants us to. And that's how we communicate, is through prayer. And we need to be praying and talking with God. You know, even if it's just to tell Him how your day went. Even if you need to tell Him that, you know, my day really stunk today, God. Man, it was bad. You know, and if I brought on this, bring it to my mind, you know, help me to make better decisions. Or if it's a situation you can't control, like a co-worker that's off the rails, just ask God to intervene. It's amazing how things happen when you ask God to intervene. He's just waiting on you to ask. He wants to talk to you. How many times do young people and children, even adult children, be going through something that's very hard because they don't want to talk to you about it, when all they had to do is talk to you about it and you could have helped them figure something out and you could have breathed? Or how many times does a boss not even know something's going on with coworkers until they find out? You know what I mean? Or how many times does a coach not know that he's got an assistant coach that he's not by that's doing things that are hurting the kids, and nobody says anything until it's brought to their attention? You know, we have to make sure that we're in prayer, that we bring things to the Lord, that we talk to the Lord about the things that we struggle with, because we all do. You know, one crazy thing about our society is we put on so many faces. And, you know, one thing I learned in going overseas, especially to, you know, or going to a third world country, or in a place where people are really poor and stereotyped, man, they got it made, because they don't have as many masks and you don't have a hard time figuring them out. Everything is what it is. It's right in front of you. What you see is what you get. Isn't that a more simple life? You know, with us many times, one of my biggest problems, say that I lose a job tomorrow, is not how am I going to eat. You think, yeah, I can eat. Yeah, I can keep a roof over our head. The biggest problem we run into is, what are people going to think? What if I have to get rid of this? What if I can't do that because, like everyone else does? And those are all things that it really doesn't matter. And we're afraid of losing our social status. We're afraid of losing what people think of us. The only one that it really matters what they think of you is God. Because if you're concerned about what God thinks of you, you're going to be doing the right thing anyway. And then you're going to, by doing the right thing and loving other people, nobody should really have a problem with you, if that makes any sense. Yeah, it does to me.
Yeah. It's, I mean, because... It just seems like the most important. I mean, that would be the most important. The most important opinion you would care about would be how you're looked at in the eyes of him.
It should be, but you know, in our society.
But right. I mean, you know, yeah.
You know, I look in the mirror every day and I see this guy getting old, and I'm like, what happened? I was talking to my daughter about this yesterday, about how some people look the same. I don't look like anything like I did when I was in high school. I mean, someone run into me, it amazes me when I'll run into someone from school that I haven't seen in all those years, and they go, hey, Steve. I'm like, how'd you even recognize me? But, you know, and many times I see people that fight to look young, do the Rogaine, dye their hair, do all those things. And I'll be honest with you, it's hard getting old sometimes. I don't like looking in the mirror and seeing an old man. I want to see that younger man. And is it tempting to do all those things to make you look young? And like, yeah, I suppose so. But I guess if you're comfortable in your own skin and you know that the one that really matters is God, and God and your spouse, you know. And you do what God wants you to do. You don't have to worry about people liking you by how you dress or how you look or those kind of things. You know, I can just get old and ugly and stay happy, if that makes any sense. I never had the best looks in the world anyway. Yeah, so, you know, where am I coming from?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I mean, same here. I mean, I've been ugly all my life, so why change now, you know?
I mean, why change now? Right,
yeah. I mean, you know, the only difference is now I'm a little grayer, you know.
It's just the same thing with a health issue. You know, my granddaughter, Julia, you've met her.
Yeah.
Julia is one of those happy-go-lucky kids most of the time, except when people point out to her that she's not like them. That's hard.
Yeah.
You know, with her handicap.
You never know it, though. I mean,
she's never known any different.
No, no.
But at the same time, not using those legs, she uses her arms pretty well.
She does.
And she loves sled hockey. Mm. You know, does a good. That's starting up again, by the way.
Uh-huh. And, but, I mean, you know, just the times I've met her, she seems to just take everything in stride. You know what I mean? Like, she doesn't really let anything bother her, you know, or, I mean.
No, I think that our biggest concern most of the time is people. Excuse me, it's drying here.
Yeah.
People's appearance of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What we think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually different than we think anyway.
Yeah.
A friend of mine told me years ago, he used to always say, you know the dumb thing about worrying? He says, you're worried about A, B, and C, but you forgot about D. And D's the one that'll sneak up and slap you in the head that you weren't even worrying about. So why worry? And I think it's a good point.
Good point.
I mean, excuse me. Cover the things you're supposed to do. Be diligent in what you're supposed to do. Trust God. And what's the point in worrying? I mean, there just really isn't. Now, if you're doing something wrong or you're doing something that you shouldn't, maybe you should be worried. Because, yeah, it's you know in the back of your mind something's going to happen because I'm doing A, B, or C. And that's the time when you give it to God and say, you know, God, I made a mistake. I mean, you know, I was talking Sunday in message about people that hold on to things that never allow them to move forward. Guilt, things we've never confessed to God for one reason or another. Sometimes I think people like to hold on to things that hurt them because somehow they feel they need punished for something. You understand what I'm saying? And people, or maybe they feel they have a right to be angry, or they have a right to hate someone or dislike them. I don't like that word hate; it's very strong. But they have a right to. But the truth of the matter is, anything that doesn't come from a pure heart needs to be confessed to God. And even though, you know, his death on the and burial and resurrection, his death on the cross that covered our sin, we accept him. All that sin's erased. That what we've done or will ever do, still, if we're harboring it in our heart, it is affecting us. And it's affecting our relationship and the blessings that we can receive from him because we're holding on to this thing that doesn't need to be there. You know, I think it's a pretty sad state of affairs when we can say, look, Jesus, I know that you were good enough to cover all of my sin except this one, and I'm holding on to it. And that, in essence, is what we do. It doesn't mean that, you know, and a lot of times people think that when you confess something as being wrong, that first I've got to make sure that I will never do it again. Or first I've got to make sure I'm completely over it. And then I can confess it because, well, that's not what confession's about. Confession is admitting. It's admitting that what you're doing, what you're holding on to, you shouldn't have. Or something you've done wrong that you need to confess to him. Yes, I know it's wrong, and you know I confess that to you. But confession and repentance are not always the same thing. You know, repentance means you turn 180 degrees and walk away from it. You may have to confess something in your life that you're struggling with that you can't turn 180 degrees from at the minute. But, you know, when you ask God and say, you know, I confess this problem in my life and I'm giving it to you, will you please help me to walk through this and get over this? And it may take you a year, 6 months, 10 years, who knows? You know, Paul talked about his thorn in the flesh that wouldn't go away. And but it doesn't stop us from confessing and admitting. I'll give you a good example. Say I had a severe gambling problem.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that severe gambling problem, I know that I need to confess that to God. Does that mean that I'm not going to be tempted to gamble anymore? I mean, I can ask him to help me walk through that and for strength and put myself in situations. That's another thing.
Well, that's what I was getting ready to say. How much of it then is on you to stay out of those situations?
That's what I was going to say.
I mean, God can only help you so much, but then if you still are in those, you see what I'm saying? I mean, like if you walk through a casino and, you know.
Right. If you keep yourself in those situations, you weren't really confessing it to begin with.
Ah, okay.
You see what I mean?
Okay.
You're saying, hey, look, I'm supposed to say I'm sorry, but I'm really not.
Right.
I'm
gonna keep doing it. You're saying. Okay.
You know,
that makes sense.
And that's the whole point. You know, don't confess something to God and then go hang out at where you were having a trouble. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right. Because it almost seems like in that sense, like you don't want to take any part of the blame. You know what I'm saying? Oh, if I gamble, you know, well, I put it on God. You know?
Yeah. Exactly. No.
But repentance
means you're. I'm walking away from this thing.
Right. But I walked through a casino, you know, or what? So therefore, don't blame me, even though you shouldn't have been in that situation. You know? I mean.
Right.
Because he did what he was supposed to. You didn't do what you were.
You didn't do what you're supposed to.
You didn't hold up your end of the bargain, yeah.
And the problem with that is that it keeps us many times from having that proper relationship with God where we trust him as a holy God and we listen to him and we grow and we stay in the Word and allow the Holy Spirit to teach us through God's Word, through the Bible. But there's just that one thing that we're not letting go of, and it builds a wall. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
What if someone told you, Terry, I love you and I want to marry you, except this one thing that I'm not giving up? You'd say, well, let me make that clear, a little more clear. What if this person said, Terry, I want to marry you. I love you. You're the most important person in the world. I would never want anyone else. But that's only 360 days out of the year. The other 5 days out of the year, I want to be single and go have fun.
Yeah.
It's like, what? I think you just killed our relationship.
Right there.
You see what I mean? And you know, why should God be so much different that we can say, God, you know, I trust you. I love you. I'm going to confess all my sin, but I'm keeping this one. And he's saying, you know what? This is a stopping point in your growth in your relationship and the joy that you can find. And we have to know that we have to just give those things up.
Yeah.
And say, I'm sorry. You know, sometimes it's hard to walk away from stuff. There's things that I've done in my life that I still struggle with.
Uh-huh.
But I have to know every day that, Lord, okay, here's the struggle. I'm giving this to you. And I've got to walk away from it. You know, you can't walk into the place that's giving you all the trouble.
Well, that's the thing is it kind of goes back to what I said. You have to, at some point, take responsibility.
Absolutely.
And a lot of times, you don't see that. You know, like I say, you don't want the onus to be on you.
Exactly.
You know, because you're so worried about the outside perception or whatever, you know, of...
I just had a conversation with a friend of mine a couple hours ago about a guy that we know that he claims, I gave my life to Christ and I'm washed in the blood, he will say. But you know what? He lives like the Dickens, and that's kind of what we're talking about. And that's just not the way it flies.
Yeah.
You know, that's God's too holy for that.
I don't know how many people I've seen that had that same attitude, and then you look at these pictures, and they got a pack of cigarettes hanging out of their pocket, you know, or something like that, or...
Yeah, and that's something that
you know, and that
people struggle with all
kinds
of things.
And that drives me crazy, man.
Because some people don't have the pack of cigarettes, but they got five bottles of maybe Xanax or something
that you don't see. Yeah, exactly.
We don't want to be too judgmental either.
Right. So. And that's what I mean. I usually don't say, you know, I would never bring it to their attention, but I'll just kind of make a mental note and say, well.
And that's, in other words, their responsibility to them. That's what, to say, you know what, I don't need to be doing something that is making someone else think that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that's making them other people think, wow, that what a Christian is. He's just a hypocrite. I don't want any part of that. It's hard enough. People are going to want to call you a hypocrite anyway when you're clean and pure as the wind driven snow. We don't give them a reason to do that.
That's
so.
Right.
Hey, you know, we are at, we're out of time here, buddy, but we, 30 seconds. We are at 209 East Water Street in Prospect. Come and see us. Call us. Hey, I will call you back. 740 494-2222. If you miss me in the office, I'll call you back anytime you want to talk. God bless you guys. I love you all. Hey, Sunday's the day in the park at 3 o'clock at Prospect
You're
Park.
Listening to WWGH Radio, LPFM, Marion, Ohio, the place for the best guests and talk. From Joey